content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. And we're going to start with an article in AARP, the magazine. And it's rather lengthy. It has lots of different parts, which we will just make our way through. For love of country. Country music reflects America in all her denim and rhinestone glory. As we celebrate our nation's birthday, this is an older magazine, its beloved stars take a moment to celebrate all that unites us. So actually, this is a July and August magazine. We are blessed by Dolly Parton. What makes me proud about this country? People. In my mind, that's all any country really is. We are all in this together, trying, searching for that thing that we like to call the American dream. Sure, we can speak our minds, but that doesn't mean we won't get prosecuted for it or that we don't need to watch our mouths. But we do have freedom of speech. We're able to be free, to walk free, and to be who we are. That's America. We should all be proud of that. Who am I? Well, I'm a storyteller, and I do it through music. Some of my favorite songs were written about my childhood, growing up here in the Smoky Mountains, like Appalachian Memories and My Tennessee Mountain Home. These stories talk about the lifestyle and the people I grew up with. Music lets us do that. It's pure and it's simple. It's how real people tell ordinary stories. It gives us a voice. In my 1971 song, Coat of Many Colors, I tell the story of how my mama made me a coat out of rags. It's about a little girl living in the rural United States where people grew up poor and worked hard for a living. But it could have taken place anywhere. People are people. But really, Coat of Many Colors is more than just a song to me. I wrote it from a special place in my heart about my mama. It turns out to also be a song about bullying, about not picking on other kids. It's about love and family and believing. It struck a chord with a lot of people, so they've made a school book out of it. I'm proud of that. I know my mama would be too. My daddy couldn't read or write, and I know it bothered him. To honor him, I started the Imagination Library. I wanted to do my part to help kids fall in love with reading. I am as proud of that program as anything I have done. We've given away almost 200 million books, and it's still growing. It is all over the U.S. and in many parts of the world. I truly believe that you can't get enough books into the hands of children. As a whole, I go where my heart leads me. I pray every day that God will guide me, and I honestly believe He does. I'm trying my best to lift people up and do my part to make the world a better place. I've been so blessed with great opportunities, and I feel if you're lucky enough to get in a position to help, you should. People helping people because it's the right thing to do. That's my America. My hope is that it's your America, too. And that was Dolly Parton speaking to Meg Grant. Now to AARP, the Bulletin. We were looking at types of caregivers and a few comments from them and how they got to be caregivers. It says here that more than one quarter of American family caregivers in 2020 said they have difficulty coordinating care. Our next person we're looking at is Rachel Hiles, 35. She lives in Kansas City, Missouri, and cared for her grandmother until she died in January at the age of 85. I wish we had had a conversation before any of this. My mom passed away. I'm an only child, and my grandma's an only child. So her care fell to me. Right before COVID, she got pneumonia and went into the hospital. I had a choice, take her home or send her to rehab. Neither was perfect. I took her home. Steve Cogman, 69. He cared for his wife, who had heart disease and dementia, for 8 years at home and in hospitals and nursing homes around Holyoke, Colorado, until her death in 2020. In our rural area, there was no home health care. Zero. The closest was about 50 miles away. They would send an aide out twice a week for 1 hour a day, and that served no useful purpose whatsoever. It was all on me. Carol McCarrick. You wouldn't believe how many people asked me in the beginning if I was going to stay with Steve, and I was like, well, why wouldn't I? You think you know about love, but you really don't until you have to take care of somebody. The financial maneuvering. Laura Cruz. Right now, we're okay, but who knows? Don has a pension from Boeing. He's getting Social Security. I'm still working. But all of my salary goes to the lady who watches him during the day. I've had to buy a hospital bed, a lift chair. I pay an extraordinary amount for an expensive medication that he needs. I wish we had gotten long-term care insurance. Carol McCarrick. That little helicopter ride was $25,000. While Steve was in the ICU, I had to have the house completely redone, doors enlarged, bathrooms overhauled, carpets up. It took all of our savings, about $80,000. Steve was 8 months from full retirement as his state job, and I begged them for full benefits for his pension and all that, but they wouldn't go for it. So now, instead of thinking about retirement in a year, I'm working 10 hours a day as a social worker so I can pay for caretakers. Brian Kramer. I do get paid through IHSS, which is California's in-home supportive services. Well, Norma gets paid to pay someone. That someone happens to be me. Amy Goyer. People don't understand the true cost. Daddy got veterans benefits, which was game-changing as far as helping with medical equipment, incontinence supplies, medications, ramps, a few hours of home health care aids. But with Alzheimer's, the costs keep escalating as the condition worsens. As I cared for both my parents initially, I had to use my credit card to help cover whatever their budget couldn't. While I eventually stopped doing that, the interest accrued. By the time Dad died, I had to declare bankruptcy. A little side item, 45% of U.S. caregivers today say they have suffered at least one financial impact. Eloise Wiggins, 70. She's caring for her oldest sister, who has advanced Alzheimer's, 10 days each month on a rotation with other family members in Suffolk, Virginia. The family pulled together to share in this experience, and we have witnessed God meeting every need. We get by. I retired in 2008, but still work part-time. I honestly can't think of anything better I can be doing with my salary. About half of African-American caregivers feel they had no choice in taking on their role, but the majority say they find a sense of purpose or meaning as caregivers. What it's like. Jeannie Ollinger. You know how the pandemic shut everything down and everybody stayed inside, ordering things off Amazon and watching TV, and mostly seeing the people you're living with and taking 1,000 precautions and only going out in true emergencies? That's caregiving, COVID or no COVID. Brian Kramer. It's nonstop. Physical therapy twice a week, what I call depression therapy every Friday. Norma has a neurologist, an eye doctor, a dentist, a podiatrist, an occupational therapist. I set an alarm for her 7 a.m. pills and her 7 p.m. pills and her 10 p.m. pills. It's hard to take good care of yourself. I've gained about 50 pounds. Janet Lenius. I bought Mom expensive hearing aids a couple of months ago, but they were stressful and confusing for her, and she kept losing them. One day I spent about 8 hours searching, and they were hiding in plain sight on a ring holder. I ended up returning them because I couldn't take the anxiety of worrying about something worth 2 diamond rings that Mom wasn't using. Karen Mason. Every day it's the same routine. Get her up, wash, diaper, medicate, breakfast, lunch, dinner, laundry. In and out of the wheelchair. My daughter is 230 pounds. I'm on disability. I've had 2 failed back surgeries. Every joint in my body hurts. But you push that aside. In 2020, 23% of American caregivers said caregiving had made their own health worse. Sharon Childs, 57. She's caring for her mother, 80, who lives nearby in Baltimore. You need to become an advocate for everything. My mother's jaw got dislocated, and the ER told me there was a no-visitors policy due to COVID. I filed complaints with the Patient Advocacy Department, the State Health Department, and the Health Commissioner. Finally, the ball started rolling. The patient support person said, "Well, you got what you wanted." I corrected her. "No, my mother got what she had a right to." Laura Cruz. I felt robbed. Don was going to retire, and we were going to travel. We were saving for a trip to Bora Bora. We were going to go out to dinner and take our grandchildren on trips. It's not supposed to be this way, especially at our age. I'm angry. Amy Goyer. You're always thinking about falls. I slept outside my mother's bedroom on a couch near the door. I gave her a bell to ring if she needed to go to the bathroom. One night she didn't ring the bell, and I didn't hear her, and she fell and fractured her spine. That led to 40 days in the hospital, and I was there 24/7 for all but 5 of those days. Rachel Hiles. It can be challenging. I felt like I was constantly lying to Grandma. She'd tell me she's late for work or school or church or some big party. I know happened 50 years ago. I would say, "Oh, Barbara Lynn, that party's next Friday." Laura Cruz. A lot of friends have dropped away, and that's okay. I totally understand. Nobody wants to hang around with a person who drools or claps all the time. People don't know how to react. I get that. But caregiving can be the loneliest job in the world. Now we have a list of coping strategies. Carol McCarrick. I think caregivers really need therapy. It helps so much. You get a lot of guilt thoughts. There's resentment. There's frustration. Jeannie Olinger. Prayer is a big part of it. There's a line in Psalms that goes, "When my heart is overwhelmed, lead me to the rock that is higher than I." Faith helps. So does coffee. Lots of coffee. Sharon Childs. I always force myself to remember that at one time my mother was able-bodied and she walked and danced and was a seamstress and an amazing cook. 34% of American caregivers in 2020 were boomers. Laura Cruz. You figure it out as you go. I'd never mowed the lawn before. I never understood cars or handiwork. A friend helped me change the car battery. I fix things around the house now. Toilet's broken? Don's certainly not going to fix it. Come on, Google. Xander Keeg. As a trans man, there are some unique situations with my father. As his memory fades, he may not remember that I transitioned 17 years ago, and he might ask, "Where's my daughter?" I've been advised by a dementia care specialist not to challenge, but rather to ask questions like, "Where does your daughter live? Tell me about her." Janet Lenius. I try not to get resentful. I tell myself Mom's just generous, but it's incredibly frustrating when I bring her meals on wheels and find later she's given her lunch to the cat at her feet. Brian Kramer. I went to a chiropractor one time and she said, "Can I ask something personal? How do you do it?" I kind of broke down with a tear. I said, "I just do." The truth is, I was in the Navy in the days before they took out the hazing. If I could become a shellback, I can take care of someone I love. Carol McCarrick. A few months ago, I went to my school reunion. That was the first time I've really been away from him. The reunion was fine, but just staying in a hotel by myself, being in the car, driving down the highway, blasting the Eagles, it was pure freedom. Now, let's move on to The Complete Guide to Memory by Centennial Health. This is the last article in this section, and it's entitled Superhuman. These memory megastars have extraordinary powers of natural recall. The article's by Pamela Weintraub. For most of us, memory is a mixed bag. Items are always slipping out of view, morphing and shape-shifting before us. Others train for recall feats like a sport. But these unique humans are famed for their naturally prodigious memories, likely made possible by the function of their brains. Nikola Tesla, the Serbian-American inventor and engineer, is best known for helping to develop the modern AC current and envisioning wireless communication. Less well known are stories of his spectacular memory. He could scan a written page and recall it photographically, word for word. According to lore, Tesla had entire reference works and a full-blown library ready for access in his mind at any moment in time. The actress Mary Lou Henner used her extraordinary autobiographical memory to tap into moments of deep emotion in her life for her roles in television and film. Kim Peck, Peake, the savant known as the Rain Man, was depicted in film by Dustin Hoffman. Perhaps because he was born without a corpus callosum, the bundle of nerves connecting the two hemispheres of the brain, Peake had alternate neural pathways and astonishing powers of recall. He easily memorized atlases and maps and could produce driving directions from anywhere to anywhere when asked. He could recite every Shakespeare play word for word. He could also serve up the important events occurring on any date in history based on his memory of newspaper headlines and historical writings and events. Mary Lou Henner is the actress famed for playing Elaine Nardo on the sitcom Taxi back in the late 70s and early 80s. She's also one of the few people in the world with a rare condition known as Highly Superior Autobiographical Memory, or HSAM. Just give Henner a date, any date, and she can tell you who she was with, what she was wearing, and even what she had for lunch. Stephen Wiltshire, the British architectural artist, can render entire cities in drawings after glimpsing them briefly in drive-by or from a plane. His most famous depictions include the Dubai skyline, the San Antonio Riverwalk, the view from the Brooklyn Bridge, the Chicago Riverfront, and Sloane Square, London. He literally drew a 19-foot-long depiction of New York City after a 20-minute ride in a helicopter. Another artist worth commemorating for her powers of recall is the Australian Aboriginal painter Winnie Bomara, widely known for depicting everything from nuclear tests to natural landscapes from memory alone. C.S. Lewis was a 20th century novelist. His works include The Chronicles of Narnia, and scholar who read and reread vast numbers of books. His retention of the text was legendary. Lewis, it seems, could remember texts primarily because he had absorbed their deep inner logic, wrote his biographer, Alistair McGrath. His diaries bear witness to this habit of reading an astonishing number of texts. His personal library contains annotations indicating when a book was first read and then read again. Bob Petrella, a former sports producer for the Tennis Channel, is known for his prodigious recollection of sports, stats, and trivia. If shown a freeze frame from a game 35 years in the past, his boosters recalled, he could dredge up every detail of the event. Finally, let's not forget Akira Haraguchi, a retired Japanese engineer, holding the unofficial record for reciting the most decimal places of pi, a formula calculating the ratio of the circumference of any circle to its diameter. In 2006, he documented his recitation of 100,000 digits in 16 hours, with breaks to eat. In 2015, on Pi Day, he's said to have recited 110,701 digits. Haraguchi admits using a mnemonic device to help him along, but still. And lastly, Albert Einstein, one of the greatest geniuses of all time. Albert Einstein gave physics the transformative theory of special relativity and the concept of the fourth dimension of time. When it came to the data underlying his work in physics, he could parry and recall with the best of them. But his memory had one cognitive weakness, a notoriously bad memory for the mundane matters of life. He couldn't be bothered to find his keys. When he boarded a train, he would have to scour his pockets for the ticket, not just to settle his fare, but to recall the destination. Albert Einstein, whose brain was preserved after his death in 1955, had no trouble remembering the physics behind his theories of space, time, and the cosmos, however. Well, we have time to spend a little more time with country music. Our song for America. Four generations of country stars share with us what they treasure most about our nation. Let's start with Loretta Lynn. We can speak our truth. Freedom for me was what I learned coming up from the holler, though I might not have known it as a young girl. It was freedom to do as you wanted, love as you wanted, and say what you wanted, even though some people might not like it. Record producer Owen Bradley allowed me to write and sing as I believed. Yes, some radio stations were not playing those songs at first, like Wings Upon Your Horns and Rated X, but they became hits anyway. I never intended to be some woman activist, but I guess a lot of people related to it, so that freedom for me was freedom for a few others. And this was as told to Alana Nash. Loretta Lynn, 90, grew up in Butcher Hollow, Kentucky, and became the first woman in country music to receive a certified gold album. Strangers Are Welcomed by Shania Twain. I left Canada really with nothing and came to the U.S. looking for a future. I had no parents after they died in a car accident. Luckily, I was embraced by mentors who would invite me to their house on weekends to be with their family. We would play guitar and sing. They cooked Southern food. I was welcomed on a personal level, which gave me a good impression of America. As Shania Twain, 56, plans a new album, her Las Vegas residency runs through September 10th. We Rise Together by Willie Nelson. America, I was born during your Great Depression of the 1930s, so I had some early experience with hard times. My sister Bobby and I were raised by our grandparents. For Thanksgiving one year, we split a can of soup. Now, hard times have come again once more. We are trying to hold on to each other and to you. I'll start that sentence again. We are trying to hold on to each other and to your great American dream for every person. We're trying to find what unites us, to remember our shared beliefs and family, in love, and in your democratic ideals, so we can become stronger, a stronger America. If we don't find what unites us, we will again be a household divided. We tried that in the 1860s, and 600,000 Americans died fighting each other. That should be our reminder that we need to get our S blank, blank, blank together and remember the ways we are all alike rather than focusing on the ways that we're different. And this was excerpted from Willie Nelson's Letters to America, copyrighted 2021, Harper Horizon, and it was reprinted with his permission. So back to AARP, the bulletin, for a few more tips on saving money. Number 87, car rentals. Up to 30% off base rates. These are advantages by being AARP members. You get a free upgrade on compact to full-size car class bookings when available, plus an additional driver at no cost at Avis and Budget Rent-A-Car. Number 88, prescription savings for everyone. And even more benefits for AARP members at Walmart Pharmacy and other participating retail pharmacies through AARP prescription discounts provided by OptumRx. 89, Consumer Cellular, 5% off monthly service and usage charges, free activation, and extended no-risk guarantee. Number 90, ExxonMobil. When you link your ExxonMobil Rewards Plus account to your AARP membership, you earn extra points on fuel and store items. Get double the points on fuel on AARP member days. Number 91, with Porch Home Services for AARP members, you get 5% off small jobs done by a porch handyman, plus 24/7 access to a porch home assistant to help manage your projects. Let's move on to gardening. 92, plant flowers that self-sow. Let annual flowers like cosmos, nigella, or larkspur go to seed in your garden. They'll drop seed for next year's flowers. Leave the area free of mulch in spring until seedlings come up. 93. Use mulch alternatives. Reserve pricing bark mulch for the front of the flower bed. Use dried leaves you've chopped and bagged with your lawnmower in less visible spots. You can also put cardboard down and then cover it with an inch or two of mulch. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.